D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5, The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and Connor Newton here with you. We're doing some DIYing here in the studio.
Check one. I'm coming in.
The microphone works. Nice. Oh, man. It just fell off its little
thingy. Now you can lean back, Willie. Lean back.
Oh, it's like, man. You know, at the concert, if you're not watching our YouTube channel right now, you know, like the mic starts in the stand, then the guy rocking out, got to take the mic out one time, you know, so you can start moving around a little bit.
I can start moving around the studio
with this.
Walk around.
There isn't much give on that wire.
Yeah,
so I don't
you can't
think
walk
you're going
too
anywhere.
Far, man.
No.
It's not good.
It's not good.
We're pleased to be joined by our friend Jonathan Hutton. First of all, Hutton, congratulations. Hutton and Withrow launched today as part of Clay Travis's new sport and state venture. You and Chad on the air every weekday from 7 to 9 a.m. Central. Congratulations. Today was the first show. How did it go?
Gentlemen, good to be back with you. It was great. Great to be back on the air and partnering with Clay Travis on his new media platform, Sport and State. sportstate.com. But by the way, the YouTube channel for us at Hutton Withrow on YouTube, I got to get the plug in. We want to grow that channel. It's fun. You know, Chad and I control our own content. Working with Clay has been a blast. We left and joined him in 2021. We're following him here. And what he's building is a full network. We've got a network of shows. Next Round Live down in Birmingham is joining us. He's going to have Clay and Buck, his current show. He's got the video rights to that. That will be live on our side every day. Kelly in Vegas, Ariel Epstein, they've got a show. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we've got JT, longtime producer in Nashville. He's joining us as our producer. And Willie, how long were you with George?
Okay, so 1993 straight through until 2011.
Okay.
And then reunited about a year later for another couple of years?
Yes. This is year 15 for Chad and I. I love doing a show with Withrow. And it's a lot of fun. It's a blast doing it with a great friend, one of my best friends. You know what that's like. You can relate to that. So, I'm very fortunate to be able to continue to do the show. Getting up early is going to take some getting used to, though. I'll say that.
We were just talking about that.
Yes.
D-Mace had it.
There was a time when Derek Mason had to wake up at the crack of dawn, which I cannot imagine.
Not again.
But, Mace, you're used to it with your football career, right?
That was different. That was totally different. Coming in and doing a radio and having to talk that early in the morning, nah.
Derek is definitely better suited for afternoon drive, so. We're glad to have you back on the program, Hutton. And again, congratulations on the launch of your new show today. So let's start with the local professional football team.
Okay.
I want to know where you stand in the great Cam Ward post-49ers week debate of 2026, because his performance last week in San Francisco was discouraging, to say the least. As you can imagine, it launched 1,000 hot takes, if not more. Where do you stand on Cam Ward after his performance in the preseason last week?
I mean, I certainly wasn't expecting it to look like that. I also understand that, you know, he was knocked around a lot last season. And this is his first live bullet since then. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe everything's sped up because of that. Brian Daboll's known for getting accuracy out of his quarterbacks. I mean, he's done that. We know the lineage there with Josh Allen and Daniel Jones and others. Cam's going to hit his layups. You know, these aren't even jumpers. These are layups. Quick toss, turn and fire. Get into a rhythm early in the game. This is what Dable's going to do within his offense. And you can see what works. I mean, the play design with Helm, that was a well-executed play by the quarterback. We saw the completion to Ridley. Those are things that was a second or third read. That was nice. A lot to be desired. This is a big week because it we're to the point where it is time to see Cam Ward, number one overall pick Cam Ward, start stacking good performances, because right now the only consistent thing is his inconsistency week in and week out. A lot of it has to do with some bad circumstances last year, but I mean, it is what it is. He's drafted where he is. He's the franchise quarterback. A lot is expected of him. And this team is going to go as far as he can take them, not Jeffrey Simmons.
I'm sure you talked about this on your show today, Hutton. We had Blake Bedingfield on the show on Monday. His review of the Titans preseason opener, and specifically Cam Ward, on PaulKuharsky.com, got a lot of reaction because he said he thinks that Cam Ward would be better off being more of a Brock Purdy than a Patrick Mahomes. He used the naughty phrase game manager to describe the way that Ward should probably play. Do you agree with that?
Well, I mean, I would take Brock Purdy right now.
Wouldn't we all?
What's Purdy getting paid? And beyond that, where would we rank Brock Purdy in the hierarchy of quarterbacks right now?
We were talking about this the other day. If you're just looking at the overall picture of Brock Purdy, Derek pointed out that Brock Purdy, he considers to be an elite processor. But if you're looking at the full body of work, I would say Purdy is if you're ranking all of the starting quarterbacks, he's definitely in the top half, but probably close to that halfway line, like 13, 14, 15, that somewhere around there. That's my opinion, at least.
That's not that, and what we're doing, what Blake has done to stir the pot, and it's his opinion, is he has compared the number one overall pick to Mr. Irrelevant.
Yes, that too.
That's the thing here. It's a franchise quarterback versus franchise quarterback, but far different investment. And you know, he's out west, he's got an offensive coordinator / head coach that gets results. We have not seen a Titans coaching staff get results out of a quarterback lately. And there is a lot on this season. It doesn't have to be a playoff year, but we need to see Ward take the turn. Because if not, there's a lot of questions for a franchise that has plenty of them as they open the stadium. And we all know that this whole 3-year plan thing, it ends this year going into 2027. And Ward is, you know, either going to be the starting quarterback the year they host the Super Bowl and the second contract, or the Titans are going to draft another one. And they'll be in this purgatory that they are. Because, again, they're not going to get out of this rut unless they have the leadership and the execution, the processing, as D-May says, the delivering consistent performances where it doesn't have to be great week in and week out. But those performances have to happen, and then the baseline, the floor, needs to be raised. And it's got to be – he needs to raise the play of everyone around him, because, quite frankly, there are questions about this offensive line, yes. But they have done a lot around him that puts him in a position to be successful within this offense, because it's not bombs over Baghdad here. He can do that, but it's quick execution plays, and they're going to have to do that to protect him more with the offensive line issues.
Now, when Blake – mentions game manager, at least to me, I think he's more so talking to the coaching staff, because I think we all come into it and we see the number one overall pick. Now, Cam has to process like a Brock Purdy, because I do believe Brock Purdy is a top five quarterback when you're talking about just completely processing the game.
Yes.
Yes, he's a top five quarterback, but it's more than just that when you want to talk about the elite ones. But
that's
even
right.
With that, it's on the coach to make sure that he puts in place a system that allows him to be a Brock Purdy. Because, yes, we know Cam can do all of these wild things, but that's not what I want to see. I want to see him consistently move the ball down the field, consistently process the way it needs to be processed. And I think a lot of that hinges on how well he and Daboll can get on the same page.
I agree. Now, by all accounts, you know, listening to Saleh, that the two are fine behind the scenes, right? Mm-hmm. We'll see. But, like, it's on both. The communication there, that they want the quote-unquote collaboration. I hate to use that word. But I think it is they're in a spot, guys, where I like this coaching staff. Mm-hmm. I like what I've seen from and heard from Robert Saleh, Daboll. I get it. Look, the execution goes a lot of different in different ways here for the offense. In San Francisco, he's got a lot of weapons over the last couple of years that execute and perform in big moments, right? The 4 or 5 plays per game that you have, they have players that get it done. And in recent drafts, we've seen them address that with Tate, of course. I think he's a player that gets it done. I like the fact that he played at Ohio State. Success rate there, wide receiver, is pretty good coming into the league recently. And they have players that know this offense. but they have not addressed the offensive line concerns. And I do think Dable's going to start by running the football out of the gate. They didn't do that last year. They didn't run the football at the highest rate I thought they could until second half of the season when they started to turn it on. That's when the offensive line got better. They weren't going to set the sack record, but second half of the season. And that helps the quarterback overall. But they've got to be better up front. But it starts with Cam Ward. Like Jeffrey Simmons said on the Pivot podcast, he went to Cam Ward this offseason and said, "This is your team. Take over." That's the leader of the football team telling the quarterback, "Go at it, take it." And now it's up to Cam Ward to go perform. That's what it comes down to. Is he going to go out and ball or not?
Well, even looking at that, and I'm glad you brought up Jeffrey Simmons and mentioned him, because I think when we've talked about it even today about this, the all defensive line having to be a top 10 defense in regards to points scored. Because that allows Cam Ward and Dable, well, at least Dable, to develop Cam Ward in a way where he's not rushing him because the defense is so bad.
And that's San Francisco, D-Mace. That's also what Purdy has.
Yes.
We're talking to Jonathan Hutton.
Hey, real quick on the up front, the D-line has to be the best unit on the team.
Yes.
I think they have invested
a ton of money up there. And I think they're number one or number two in the league in total money invested on the defensive front. That's solid defense right there. And with the concerns that we've seen on the back end of the defense at corner and defensive back, they have to get after the passer because they'll get the ball back to the offense and at least keep the score lower.
I think you're dead on that. Jonathan Hutton is with us. And Hutt, let's volley back over to college here. We talked to Chad about this. And we kicked it around ourselves earlier, but The Athletic came out with a good SEC preview by some guys, you know, that they know what they're doing. Nobody knows what the predictions are going to be. It's getting harder every year, I think, with the NIL. But they had Tennessee at 7-5, and their point was, in the SEC, you could be a good team, but with the schedule the way it is, especially for some particular teams in the league, and Tennessee's one of them, who have it particularly tough, you could be a good team and be 7-5, but how do you think you would feel if you're a Tennessee fan and they went 7-5? That's a tough one.
Well, so I think we're fooling ourselves here. It's like Alabama with DeBoer. Whenever they hired DeBoer, the donors that we know in Tuscaloosa were saying, "Hey, this is your. Don't worry about that. You know, they're going to take a year to recruit. The fan base will give them. The fan base isn't giving him time. They're all over that coach.
Right.
You know, 8 wins is not good enough. It would be that situation in Knoxville." That's the name of the game right now. 7 wins is going to alert some fans and start some chatter. Not that I would be buying into that. I really like Josh Heupel. His win percentage is much higher than you would expect over the course of his entire career. And I like what he's done in the SEC compared to other programs in that same range of where he's elevated Tennessee to. The question is, can they take the next step, right? Like, where's the floor versus the ceiling? And that's to be determined. Look, I brutal schedule, right? They've got a gauntlet. But a lot of teams can say that. But the 14th toughest schedule in the country, how many more are SEC teams ahead of them? You know, they're ranked 20th in the preseason top 25 for what that's worth. But how many SEC programs are ahead of them there? You know, like it's always SEC dominant when we start touching on this. But look, at the quarterback decision. How much is either the redshirt freshman or the freshman going to come in and actually perform out of the gate? That matchup against speaking of Chad, I think he's right. Like the matchup against Georgia Tech really determines how the season tends to unfold here on the over-under win total. Because if you go and you win or lose that game, you tend to think they hit the over-under 7 right there. Mm-hmm. And they've got some suspensions. They've got injuries. Offense is not going to be churning, I wouldn't think, that early. If they play both quarterbacks in the first game, you would think. So can the defense hold and be the rock of the team early in the season enough to where you get the quarterback stable and you start to move the football and put up points? That will determine 8 wins or more right there.
That's a big one. Do you think that SEC fans, I know the answer. I'm asking this, but I know the answer. But I don't think SEC fans will recalibrate at all what the record looks like, even though you're now, as an SEC member, asked to play the extra conference game but not give up the Power Four game. So you mentioned Georgia Tech. Vanderbilt's got NC State. They've all got one, right, in addition to the extra conference game. But I don't think fans are saying, well, they went 7-5, but, you know, you got to play the extra conference. They're not going to calculate it that way.
Well, it's to me, Willie, it's sometimes it's not if you lose, it's how you lose.
True.
That last game against Vanderbilt last year, Knoxville, that they ended up hiring Indiana's strength and conditioning coach based on that. They got pushed around. Now, Vanderbilt's doing that to a lot of teams now. They were doing it to Alabama. But they're doing it at a level where it's jarring with the way that game played out, especially the second half, right? Like, that's how you lose the game, not if you lose. And I think that sits with fans a lot more than just the overall record, especially when you start stacking losses to teams that you, in the preseason right now as we're talking, you check off the box as a win or a should-be win. Every SEC program's doing this. South Carolina fans are optimistic right now, right? But I look at it as like, what does Heupel get out of his quarterback play? And how quickly can a solid, proven defensive coordinator get the most out of that group where they have a great linebacking core, solid secondary, and what can he generate up front with some question marks at pass rush?
Now, Hutt, do you think that regardless of who they choose at quarterback, whether it's Brandon or McIntosh, do you think the fan base will be comfortable with that choice?
I mean, I think everyone's pretty much set on Brandon. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that McIntyre's getting some run here, but I mean, I thought it was a foregone conclusion based on reports that it was stays on Brandon, and maybe it still is. I still think that the track record has been when there's been a quarterback battle, Mace, mm-hmm. the second guy has always been the guy that comes in and actually plays well. You know, we saw it certainly with Hendon Hooker. That's the best example. There's going to be growing pains regardless of these two. I wonder how do they go into that first game wanting to get reps with the starter versus the backup? Because you would expect the score to separate from the opponent. Mm-hmm. And is there a separation in the battle, or is it really a tight decision right now? Because, again, I want my starter going into Georgia Tech. I want one guy. That's the best case scenario because I tend to think it's Brandon just based on athletic capability and the fact that he can run the football.
Jonathan Hutton has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan and Donick. You can catch him and our friend Chad Withrow weekday mornings on the new Sport and State website launched today. Hutton, again, congratulations on the new venture. We'll do this again soon.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Yep,
enjoyed
no
it.
No problem. Thank you.
615-737-1025. We'll react to what Hutton had to say. You can as well. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
So my follow-up is, what will you allow to get out there about what Daboll is coaching Cam Ward up on hard? Like you said that he doesn't sugarcoat anything. That is a fact. Anybody that he's coached up from either Jalen Hurts in college to, Josh Allen in Western New York will tell you that. Jackson Dart, obviously, last year in New Jersey. But listen, he's a bit of a hard ass, which is probably one of the many reasons why you hired him. What's he telling him? Like, what's he?
Well, he's a truth teller. You know, like a lot of times in this day and age, where you'll find that these kids are raised to kind of coddle, in the sense that you know being honest with kids is kind of, you might lose a kid if you're too honest with them. So you got to sugarcoat everything and kind of coddle them. But we've always taken the approach, Daboll too, that they'll respect you more if you tell them the truth. Tell them where they are. Tell them what they need to get done. Tell them whether they're right or wrong. And you can't be afraid about, we're not trying to make friends. But in the process, you're going to end up finding that yourself in a very honest, open relationship that gets the most out of each other. And I think that's where Daboll's strength is with Cam right now.
Hold on.
Yes.
This is an awesomely bad song.
This was on VH1's. No. This was on VH1's list of the most awesomely bad songs ever. Bill Collins, Sussudio.
I'm throwing the flag on this one. Come on, this is a great song.
I figured you would like it, which is why I included it.
We will not have anything bad said about Phil Collins on this show. Awesomely, no, nothing bad, unless you're talking about like Michael Jackson bad. Like, I'm bad. Bad is good.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. Come on.
Well, wait until you hear
with
the song.
With the Earth, Wind, and Fire horn section that he hired? This is, come on.
Wait
this
until
is like
you
number
hear
one
the
in
song.
The country.
Wait until you hear the song at the end of the show.
It's going to be a doozy, huh?
There's no comparison to that song and the thong that, song. Come on.
Come on.
They
you
were on
decide.
The same list. They were on the same list.
They don't belong on the same list.
They were on the same list.
It should be in different time zones, those two songs.
Again, the number one song on the list of most awesomely bad songs ever, as decided by VH1 like 20 years ago, We Built This City by Jefferson Starship. That was the number one.
I can see that. Sue Studio, come on. That's a great song. It's like number one.
That was a staple at places, man. Come on. Y'all hate that song?
I didn't make the list. I didn't make the list.
These are iconic songs, man.
Again, wait until you hear the last one. Wait until you hear the last one. By the way, that was Robert Saleh on the Rich Eisen Show talking about Brian Daboll, Cam Ward, coaching. And that's a theme we hear a lot these days. You can't. You know, kids these days, you've got to sugarcoat everything. You can't be honest with them. But Robert Saleh, he says that he and Daboll, they're being honest, being straight shooters with Cam Ward.
I don't think that it's you can't be honest with kids. I think sometimes you feel you need to package it in a way where they can accept it a little bit better. It's not like they're doing this and you're telling them, oh, you're great. And everybody knows that, no, that person isn't great. But this does fall in line with, I believe, what Blake Bedingfield said about Cam Ward and what the organization may need to start to be honest with themselves about. And I'm not saying that they are at that point, and I'm not saying that, you know, Cam Ward can only be Brock Purdy. But there is going to come a time where, I think that's why Blake is more so, it's like talking to the coordinator in the organization than he is the quarterback. Because the quarterback can think whatever he wants to think. Me as a coordinator and us as an organization, we know what we see. So it's either you think you're great and we see, or you're just okay. So now we got to cater everything to that. So, which means, yes, you were drafted number one. Yes, we understand what the implications of that is. But we actually have you in the building now. We're going through developing you. And maybe there comes a point where we just realize, if that ever happens, that your ceiling is more Brock Purdy than Patrick Mahomes. Then, yes, as an organization, you have to be honest with yourself and put your quarterback on that road, because your team will follow behind.
What I thought it was an interesting, just philosophical discussion there. Forget about the specifics of quarterback to coach, but the whole, in this day and age, you've got to almost retrain these guys who have grown up being the high recruits in a lot of cases. Hey, you're the greatest thing ever from your neighborhood. Let me shower you with all these benefits. And, hey, you got an NIL now. You can get paid in high school. You can get paid in college. The coddled thing. I wonder how much it did evolve. And are coaches going back to, hey, we have to adjust because these guys have been coached a different way than maybe their generation was coached. What do you think of that dynamic?
As far as the quarterbacks, I mean,
no, as far as anybody, just general coaching
in general
at the pro level, right?
At the pro level,
where you're not like in the past, it's like, hey, these guys are pros. I don't need to be Bobby Knight. I don't need to be Vince Lombardi. These guys are pros. They know, but now that you've got this, maybe this generation of NIL kids and guys who maybe a little. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say soft, but it's different. These guys have come in made hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars sometimes, as they're walking in.
But I think it's at least – I think that's always at least, you know, let's just say starting in 97 when I got in the NFL and sort of fast forward a little bit into the 2000s. I think that was always in place, because I'm sure as a head coach back in the early 2000s, there were certain ways you had to coach certain individuals. Everybody didn't, you know, respond to the yell and scream and the pointing and this and that. You always had to evolve yourself as a head coach. I think Jeff Fisher even talked about that. Yeah. You know, having to be more than just the X's and O's. You got to know how to coach an individual. And every player is coached different.
Okay, so let's take the honesty part. Adam, do you think that in college there are times where a coach is not, quote, honest because he's afraid that if I'm honest with this kid, he's going to leave? And I think down the road, this kid could be a player. We want him to stay. So I'm going to tiptoe around it a little bit. I'm going to maybe handle a little different instead of just maybe dropping the iron glove and saying, we've got to have it right now. You've got to do this. I do think that that's a dilemma sometimes for college coaches where you lose the quote, directness or the honesty part of it. And Robert Saleh sitting there going, we got to be honest with these guys. Maybe some of these guys haven't been coached that way, but we have to do it.
One texter says, would you say if Cam Ward's performance was as good as Chad Pennington's when he played for the Jets, would the Titans be a winning team? First of all, that is a name I haven't heard in a very long time.
Chad Pennington.
Knoxville Webb. Chad Pennington.
I've got to go to Chad Pennington's Pro Football Reference page.
He had a couple good. He was there for the Herm Edwards Jets teams that were pretty good. They whipped the Peyton Manning Colts team 1 year in the playoffs.
His best year, 2002, 8-4 as a starter, a 68.9% completion rate, 22 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. I mean, I would take that for Cam Ward.
Yeah.
Or today's equivalent of that. I would certainly take that.
But that, you know, knowing what you have, and Chad wasn't a number one overall pick, but I believe, what round did he get chosen in?
He was a first-round pick, 18th overall in 2000.
So he's still a first-round pick. So
am I right? He was Randy Moss's quarterback at Marshall.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So there's still a level of expectation you have because you were the number one pick. I mean, because you were a first-round pick. Now the expectations is even higher when you're the first pick overall. But I think that, you know, once you start coaching that individual, regardless of where you drafted him, man, you could have drafted him, you know, he could have been Mr. Irrelevant. But once you get him in camp and start to see how he's developing, you know, either you got more than what you thought you were going to get at Mr. Irrelevant, or you're getting a little bit less of what you thought you were going to get as the first overall. Now I got a coach based upon that, which I've seen. It's not I'm coaching based upon what we evaluated him. Now I got him in the building. Now we're developing. Now he may not be that elite number one overall guy. He just may be a good quarterback.
Now I'm remembering when Joey Harrington had a billboard in Times Square right before he was drafted by the Lions.
Sorry, Derek Mason. With the Lions, too. Gosh,
yeah, he went 3-9 in his rookie year with the Lions. One texter says, coaches tiptoe around kids now because of NIL. Before, they wouldn't tiptoe around anything because if the kid talked back, they would just bench him and then not sign off on a transfer and make him sit out for 2 years and make him irrelevant.
Well, and even if they didn't go that far, you still had to sit out a year,
yeah.
which was you know, a lot. That's a whole ordeal. You got to find out where you're going, and that whole year can be a long year. I've seen plenty of red shirts back in the day.
Do you really think, Derek, that the style of coaching in terms of how a coach addresses a player really has a measurable impact on how a player performs?
I think some guys early on, I think how you coach them up, how they, you know, receive that coaching, how they learn. I think there is a art and a science to it. That's why everybody can't be coaches. Even the greatest of players sometimes just can't make that transition to be a coach because it's hard, because everybody can't be coached the same. They just can't. If everybody was the same, you know, if everybody had the same traits and everything else, then yes, you know, coach all 53 of them because they all alike. But in sports, you know, you can have a three-person team, and you can't coach all three of those people the same because they're different. It's the same with 53 men, you know, trying to coach everyone. Jeff Fisher couldn't coach. You know, he can talk to everybody, and he can be the same when you're talking about discipline with everybody. But he didn't coach me or could coach me the way he coached Steve McNair or the way he coached Eddie George. It was totally different because we're different individuals and we approach the game totally different. So you got to know who you're coaching and how to coach them to get the best out of them.
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans. Their next open practice, Friday, against the defending Super Bowl champion, Seattle Seahawks. So we will all be out there, really interested to see how that practice shakes out for the Titans, hopefully better than their practice with the Niners. 615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show coming up next. Yesterday, a lot of you seemed entertained when I went off script and complained about something. Well, I've got another complaint to share to end the show.
Oh, boy.
End the show.
And we have to reveal the most awesomely bad song
on my list.
Yeah.
Well, it's not the most awesomely bad song of the group, but I feel like the two of you are going to be really upset that this song was included on the list.
More upset than Susudio? Wow.
I think so.
Oh, man.
I think so.
We got to find out about this.
615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
Oh, no.
Shut your mouth.
Wait a minute.
Seriously?
You can't. This can't be. It can't be.
You cannot. This song was a hit. See, oh, my. Wow. When Eddie dropped this song, man, every party all the time was everywhere.
Yeah.
1985. Eddie Murphy, party all the time.
With Rick James backing him up.
Exactly. That song was everywhere. Come on.
All right, let me give you.
There's nothing bad about this.
Wow. Let me give you.
This is a good. That was solid.
Exactly.
Solid song.
Let me give you the top 10 from 10 to 1 of VH1's 50 most awesomely bad songs ever. This list came out like 20 years ago. Number 10, Huey Lewis in the News, The Heart of Rock and Roll. Number 9, Bobby McFerrin, Don't Worry, Be Happy.
I
thought that was a good song.
That's a unique song.
Number 8, Ricky Martin, She Bangs.
Come on.
Number 7, Eddie Murphy, Party All the Time.
Come on.
Number 6, Deep Blue Something, Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah, that's kind of a weak song.
Number 5, Vanilla Ice, Ice, Ice Baby. Number 4,
that's controversial.
Limp Bizkit, Rollin'.
I liked Rollin'.
Number 3, Wang Chung, Everybody Have Fun
Come
Today.
On.
Now that one, awesome. I think that's the true awesomely bad, because it's like over the top.
But everybody was singing it.
Everybody Wang Chung tonight. Yes. Like, what does that even mean? I don't know.
Number 2, Billy Ray Cyrus, Achy Breaky Heart.
same genre there. Those two are
Number 1, Jefferson Starship, We Built This City.
Yeah, that one commonly gets up there on those.
But I figured that Party All the Time would pop the
Come
both of you.
On. That I will be say on the list.
That when in the old... In the days back in the 80s, when the DJ, if you were at the school dance and they played that song, it cleared the floor.
Oh.
Everybody's out of there. We built this city. It was like, oh, I'm going to go get a drink, you guys. Where's the punch bowl?
But it was a staple, though. It was a staple, man.
What are some of the other honorable mentions?
All right, let's see. Some of the other songs included on this list. Brian Adams, The Only Thing That Looks Good on Me Is You.
I don't know much about that
Rex
one.
And Effect, Rump Shaker.
Oh, see, on, that's a good song.
Damn.
Now, that's not clearing the dance floor. People are going
to
gather for that
one. More people are coming to the dance floor.
Yeah, that's bringing them in.
Meatloaf, I'd Do Anything for Love, but I won't do that.
That title's too long.
Color Me Bad, I Want to Sex You Up.
That was that's a jam. Come on.
Rednecks, Cotton Eye Joe. Yeah. Rednecks, Cotton Eye Joe.
We could do without the Cotton Eye Joe.
Yeah, it gets played a lot. That's an arena.
Corey Hart, Sunglasses at Night.
No, that's awesome.
That was a hit. That was a hit. Come on.
It was a big hit.
Come on.
Jerry says, Party All the Time was absolutely horrible. There's no accounting for taste.
Come on, when Eddie.
Should we play it again for old time's sake?
Eddie was a top notch.
He was Eddie Murphy as a singer, just barely good enough to get
by. Exactly.
Just barely. You notice he's struggling. He's trying to hit the notes here. See, now that's Rick James. He's coming in with the backup.
Exactly.
That helps the song right there.
Anytime you could throw Rick James on a track is good, okay? Right. Back then, come on now.
Can I ask a dumb question?
Yes.
Who's Rick James?
Oh, no.
I'm Rick James.
Go home. home, Connor.
Just Google him. Just
Rick
Google
James.
Go home and watch the Chappelle Show skit about Rick James. That's all you need to know.
Just Google him.
Shoot the J. Shoot it.
Shoot it.
Was that Prince?
That was Prince.
That was Prince. I'm sorry. That was not Rick James.
Some of the best interviews of all time, Rick James.
What did the five fingers say to the face? Slap. Cold-blooded.
I think we can all tell the age gap going on here.
Oh, no, Connor. Oh, no. Yes, go home and watch the Chappelle Show skit about Rick James.
Oh,
that's,
man.
That's all you need to know.
Rick James.
Now, Rick James, he did like to party all the time.
Yeah, he did.
Indeed.
Absolutely.
In addition to Eddie Murphy's Girl.
One texter said, the Macarena is pretty bad. That is true. Al says, what about Mbop by Hanson? Not on the list.
No, it's not.
Yeah, those might be awesomely bad, both of those.
But the Macarena, didn't you find yourself getting up dancing?
Oh, yeah.
So why is that awfully bad?
It's awesomely bad.
See, yeah, which means it's so bad it's good.
That's the sweet spot. We know it's cheesy, but we're going with it. We're all in on it.
Josh says, Connor, you're fired.
Sorry. I could say people that you three probably have no idea who they
you're
are.
All right, name somebody.
Right. You're absolutely right.
Okay, let's see. Do any of you know who Dylan Marlowe is?
Nope.
There you go.
Dylan Marlowe? Mm-hmm.
Nah, can't say I do.
He's a country singer.
Okay.
Do you know who, what was his name?
I know Patrick Marlowe, the hockey player.
Joshua
Bassett.
Hello,
Marlowe from The Wire.
Joshua who?
Joshua Bassett.
Oh, that's an old boy.
Yeah?
Yeah, old boy. You know who he is.
Joel says...
Describe him.
Joel says...
Go ahead, Charlie. Let's hear it.
The Predators absolutely used We Built This City for a pregame anthem one season.
What?
Did they?
I don't remember that.
Joel, give us
the year. You know what? They did. And it didn't last very long. There was a lot of...
It
was awesomely bad. There was a lot of back and forth on that. I think they moved on quickly.
Oh, okay. Well, you're right. I don't.
Wait, who's the third guy besides Josh Bassett?
I didn't come up with a third one. Give me a second.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, yesterday.
Josh Baskin was Tom Hanks's younger self in the movie Big. Mm. Is that who you're talking about? Josh Baskin?
Not even close. Okay.
Yesterday, I went a little off script when I complained about people who are willing to sacrifice friends and family in order to watch college football all day on Saturday. And it got me thinking about other things that bother me. And when I'm annoyed, I even said this today as I was taking my kids to school and some jerk would not let me merge, although I clearly had my left turn signal on. I said, what are we doing? So that's what I think when I'm annoyed. What are we doing? Mm-hmm. And here's another edition of what are we doing to end the show. Yesterday, I was in the Rivergate area. And as I was going to where I was going, I noticed across the street a sign for Spirit Halloween on August 18th.
Ooh.
August 18th.
Man.
What are we doing? Why do we need a Halloween store more than 2 months before Halloween? Man. What are we doing? I am very much against skipping through the months, skipping past holidays. For example, I've said this before. I'll say it again. It is unacceptable to put up your Christmas decorations until Black Friday. It bothers me to no end. When people put up their Christmas decorations on November 1st, that is Thanksgiving erasure, all right? Make sure that you give Thanksgiving its due before you put up your Christmas decorations.
That I'm with. I'm with you with that.
To me, Black Friday is the first day you are allowed to put up Christmas decorations if I'm involved. My wife knows that. She doesn't listen, but she knows it.
All right, so let
so
me ask you this.
What are we doing, Spirit Halloween, on August 18th?
It's still hot outside.
I'm going to connect what you're saying because I think it's Christmas's fault because I feel like Thanksgiving feels a little shortchanged because people put the Christmas stuff early. Mm-hmm. And the same thing has happened with Halloween. People skip over Halloween for the Thanksgiving stuff. So I think Halloween's like, well, then we're going to put stuff up in August. That's what we're going to do, the Halloween people.
Just to get the full effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, so people don't forget about that.
I think that's the...
Is anybody buying their Halloween costume on August 18th? If you are, let us know. 615-737-1025.
You may be able to get it cheaper now if you buy it. We all know that when you're getting ready to go get something come what, October, mid, beginning to mid-October. Yeah. Everything's gone.
August is early.
Everything's gone.
Well, that's what Spirit Halloween does. Mm-hmm. The company finds abandoned storefronts, squats in them for a couple of months, sells some costumes, and leaves.
Yeah.
That's what happens. Brandy says
they're selling the early bird specials.
Yes. Brandy says Halloween is the next holiday. Pumpkin spice lattes come back next week.
Is that next week? Oh man.
They're back already.
That's insane. That's insane. Okay, one texter may be talking me off the ledge. One texter says, I've helped put together one of those stores before. It takes at least a month to get it set up. Okay. But still, I mean, okay, if it opens at like mid-September, I'll allow it. I'll allow it then. But I saw the sign, and I was like, you can't be serious. You're opening up the Halloween store now?
Yeah, they want their time, man. They want their, their place in the sun, in the sun, okay? They want to shine. Let them shine. Let them shine at them.
One texter says, should we move American Thanksgiving to where Canadian Thanksgiving is to allow more time? Mm-hmm. Canadian Thanksgiving is early November? Or no, it's like mid-October, actually. Right? I don't know when Canadian Thanksgiving is.
I'm not Canadian.
I feel like I've been up there for that, and I still don't remember when it is.
I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
On one of the trips.
Craig says, if I come to your house for Thanksgiving and Christmas stuff is up, I'm leaving. One texter says, thank you. My wife puts up our Christmas tree the day after Halloween, drives me nuts. That is insane.
That's early.
That is
super early.
I mean, that's just an insult to Thanksgiving.
Yes, indeed. So here's my...
Thanksgiving is quality. You've got to take advantage of... The good things of Thanksgiving.
My rule of thumb is Christmas decorations, Black Friday through January 2nd. You can keep up your Christmas decorations through the new year, and then when that's done, you have to take them down, unless you're Derek Mason, who once said you're allowed to say Happy New Year to somebody in March if you haven't seen them in that calendar year.
But you know what? Thanksgiving, I'm just thinking about this. Thanksgiving is not one of those days you need to ramp up for. So I don't know why it infringes on any and everybody else's holiday. Because Thanksgiving is just that day. It's not like, Christmas, you got to put up your Christmas tree. Right, you got to do all this. Halloween, you got to put out the Halloween stuff.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving, I mean, I know people put
there's a little flavor and stuff, but not as much.
Like
not as much. Yeah.
Really a one-day thing. It's like a one-stop shop. Bam, you're out of here the next day.
Right.
Because they're going to Christmas stuff the next day. So Thanksgiving really only has that one day.
Brian says, Adam, I put my Christmas stuff up early in November because my wife puts up 11 Christmas trees, but my boss likes to start our Christmas office music September 1st.
Ooh, that's
early. By the time
early.
Halloween rolls around, I'm
September 1st.
That's
early.
That is super early.
Hey, Brian, my advice to you, quit.
Yeah, that's a tough workplace. That's a tough.
Yeah,
that's
man.
A little
Christmas early. Songs in September.
By the time you get to December 1st, you've played out all the songs.
You ain't got no more songs.
But my point is, yesterday I was driving, minding my own business, trying not to be mad at people who are like, oh, like, honey, I can't do anything on Saturdays because I have to watch college football all day long. And then I saw the Spirit Halloween sign, and I said, what are we doing? We don't need a Halloween store in mid-August. But one texter says it takes a month to set up, so maybe I'm misinformed, and that's okay. I will correct the record if I am indeed misinformed. But I saw the sign. I said, guys, it's like 8 weeks until Halloween, maybe even 10 weeks until Halloween. We're not doing that.
They're getting you ramped up, man. Costume.
One texter says, ditto in Clarksville, we do Wild Turkey Wednesday the day before Thanksgiving. Turkeys are a sensitive subject on this program.
Yeah.
After Willie bludgeoned one on the way to Portland one
They're
time.
Listening. They're listening. So I ain't saying nothing bad about a turkey.
Oh, man. But that's all. So I feel like we should wrap up the show every day by asking ourselves, what are we doing? And getting something off of our chest before we go home. And you all can participate as well.
Okay. I've got a candidate for tomorrow then.
Okay.
What are we doing?
What are we doing?
What are we doing?
Well, I think I accidentally hijacked it before you even started by not knowing who Rick James was.
Yeah, what are we doing here? You don't know who Rick James. What are we doing?
I do know, actually.
Now you know.
Super Freak.
There we go.
There you go.
Yes.
Absolutely.
That's a start.
Connor,
start.
What's coming up on the 6th, my friend?
The birthday boy. Dr. Crane, he's going to
Mahoney Donick?
Oh, I wish we could interview him. That'd be awesome.
Can we get Mahoney Donick on the 6th?
I'm sure you could.
Dr. Crane's going to join. We're going to talk about Titans training camp. Plus, I have a what are we doing that I don't think Vols fans are going to like.
Ooh.
So we'll get into that.
Sensitive. Maybe someone will call and yell at you again.
Be great.
That'll do it for us today. We will talk to you tomorrow, of course, at 3 p.m. We'll continue our discussion on the Tennessee Titans as they prepare for a joint practice against The Seahawks' Mitch Light will join us in the 4 o'clock hour to talk some college football. But in the meantime, have a wonderful rest of your day. Have a safe drive home if you're driving right now. And we'll talk to you tomorrow at 3.
Be loved, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team loves you. You hear that music, don't you forget about us, because we will not forget about you. We're back on these airways starting at 3 p.m. tomorrow on 102.5 The Game, discussing more Tennessee Titans and everything else sports. And we will even get into some stuff that doesn't have to do with sports, as we always do. But as I always say, we're going to be talking, and
you're going to be listening.
Peace, and the six is next.